hello. Welcome to episode 134.
That was almost very Miss Vanjie-esque of you. Hello, hello, hello.
Hello. Hello, France.
One of us watches Drag Race and the other doesn't. Moving on.
I don't at all.
Yeah, this was my first season. I really, really loved Miss Vanjie a lot.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, maybe I'll get to it one day.
Yeah.
This is kind of a hockey themed episode.
Yes.
A little bit, which is very weird. We don't do those a lot.
A wee little bit. But let's not sully her great name by calling this a hockey episode, because that's not what this is.
No, we will mention it.
Yes, we will at the very end. But today we are talking.
Do you watch hockey, Max?
No. Today we are talking about a woman who I do not think is respected nearly enough for the pop icon that she absolutely was, and that is Laura Branigan, truly one of my first loves in life.
Oh, yeah, me too.
When I was a little kid, I used to call the same radio station every Friday night and ask for the same Laura Branigan song. And the DJ knew me. Like, by the time I called, she'd be like, hey, Maxter, I'll play it. I mean, literally every Friday night. I was probably 9, 10 years old.
And that's the best. Which station?
It was, well, at the time, it was Mix 102.
Oh, yeah.
That Remember Mix 102? Mm-hmm. And which is now back to being LRS 102, which is what it was.
What is their format, though, now?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Because it was LRS for a while, but it wasn't the old LRS.
Right. See, back in the day, LRS, this is like totally boring to non-Louisville people, but back in the day, WLRS was like the alternative station. They played like new wave and punk, and like that was their thing. And then they kind of flipped and went to this like adult contempo thing. Mm-hmm. And I was super pumped about it, but none of my friends were. And then they went back to being this like punky alternative thing by the end of the 90s. I feel like they had a phase where they were like a talk station for a bit, an FM talk station.
I think like they went back to a mix, I think, most but recently when I left.
Anyway, the point is, in those few brief years when WLRS was playing the adult contempo hits of the 80s and 90s, my small child butt was very excited about it and called every Friday to ask the same DJ to play the same Laura Branigan song. And God, that was brilliant. The genesis of my love for her. So yeah, let's talk about Laura Branigan. She was born on the 3rd of July, 1952, which I did not realize was a point of contention until just a couple of years ago. A Billboard and some other news outlets actually had to issue retraction/correction. I guess correction would be the best word for her obituary that had happened 12 years earlier. Yeah, spoiler alert, she's dead. But I guess they had reported her year of birth at the time is 1957. I don't know what the confusion was, but I found all these people back in 2016 issuing these corrections. Like, oh, by the way, Laura Branigan, here's a reprinted version of her 12-year-old obituary because she was actually born in 1952.
Was someone mad about it? And they were like, excuse me, Billboard?
I don't know. And there was also, I think it was Billboard, in fact, who mentioned there was also a correction that everybody had listed her having grown up in Brewster, New York, when she actually grew up in Armonk. I was just like, these are strange details that seemed like should have been very easy to nail down. But whatever.
It's okay.
So we're going to get them right here. She was, in fact, born in Brewster, New York, and grew up in Armonk, New York. And I had to look up where these towns were. I'm not a New York person. Brewster is significantly further north. It's like on the Connecticut-New York line. Armonk is on the Connecticut-New York line as well, but it's just slightly like north of the general
exactly,
New York
yeah, I
City
think it's
area.
Like near Westchester.
Sure.
Somebody famous lives there. I looked it up recently.
But
David Boies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Laura's origins are definitely Manhattan. She moved there after high school, and she attended the American Academy of Dramatic Arts and ended up becoming a backup singer for Leonard Cohen, which I did not know until researching this episode.
And I can see that.
And in fact, toured Europe with him. And that was like her starting gig. And then this was the coolest thing. I learned two very important things here. She got signed to Atlantic Records after that tour by the founder of Atlantic Records, Ahmet Erdogan.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not know also that Atlantic Records was founded by a Turkish-American guy. I thought that was pretty cool.
I didn't know that either.
So yes, Ahmet Erdogan, who was the founder of Atlantic Records, signed Laura Branigan himself.
Wow.
So that's how much they loved her.
She's pretty fantastic. I don't blame her. Blame him.
So Laura was signed around 1980, and you can actually find a couple of early singles of hers. Nothing terribly exciting. I think she was also in a group called Meadow for a bit like around the Leonard Cohen time. I think that may have been what led her into the Leonard Cohen.
I think so too. Thing. Yeah, I read something about it. And also I saw like a very weird thing about they named it Meadow because of something about where like Paul McCartney and Wings would have landed. I do not understand what that sentence meant, but it's a Paul McCartney and Wings reference that
doesn't
make any sense. It's the lamest early 70s thing I've ever heard in my life.
That does sound incredibly lame early 70s.
So that's what I think. It's some mellow gold. Yes, we're gonna, it's some mellow gold nonsense.
We're going to gloss over her.
Yeah, we're going to
that song.
We're going to move that point on to the career. Better things.
Yes, and talk about Laura's first album, which came out in March of 1982, and it was called simply Brannigan. It ended up being a number 34 album in the U.S., and it also charted in Canada and Australia. The first single off of it is called All Night With Me, and I guarantee you, you have never heard this song. it peaked at number 69, nice, in the United States. And that is probably the most interesting thing about it.
I mean, the thing, this is the song that came out before Gloria.
Right.
Which, and it's so un-Gloria, it kills me. Right. Like, it is mellow gold. Like,
it's total mellow gold.
It does not sound at all.
Like, it's not even yacht rock. This is like catamaran rock. This is like schooner rock. This is like this is the most like this is remember like really early Sheena Easton? That's what this sounds like.
Yes. Oh my God. It's like straight from I don't know. It's like straight from the studio to the nursing home ballroom
100%
dance
yes.
that happens at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
It got to number 69 from the grandmas that were out buying this 45.
Yeah, it was just I wasn't
to then try to
it.
Figure out how to play it on their Victrolas.
I was absolutely not expecting this when I played this. I was like, huh.
No, it's cool. Very like the end of the Carpenters sound kind of thing.
Yes.
But it was her introduction to the world stage, and here we are.
Mm-hmm.
Does it feel
It wouldn't be until June of 1982 that the true legend was unleashed on the world, the song Gloria, which was a number two hit in the U.S. I didn't know this wasn't a number one.
I thought it was a number one.
Makes me very sad.
But I wonder what beat it out.
It was a number one in the in Canada and Australia, and it was a number six hit in the U.K. And a lot of other countries as well. Mm-hmm. So this is a cover of an Italian song that had come out just a few years earlier by a guy named Umberto Tozzi.
Tozzi, yes.
Tozzi.
He's the best.
Yeah.
I love him. And that's a great version, too.
His version is okay, but I mean...
It's just such a great song. Like, it's still got that riff
in it. It is a great song.
Yeah, I mean, yes. It's an Italian... So,
and this is, I think, one of the first songs to really make a synthesizer the prominent voice of the song.
Yeah.
Because Gloria would not be Gloria without that synth riff.
No, it's iconic. And the thing that I loved about Gloria, and this is one of my favorite songs when I was a little kid, because
helped
Gloria was because it still had a rock sound. It was kind of unclassifiable. So it was getting played on radio. It was getting played on pop radio. It was getting played on rock radio. So it had this huge audience of like, so that's why, like when I was a kid, like late 80s, early 90s, this was I had to listen to classic rock radio in the car with my dad. I never got to listen to cool radio. But my favorite songs that would come on were Van Halen's Jump, because it was one of those in the middle synth songs, and Gloria. All the time, and I loved it. And I think what's so great about it is it came out right at that moment where they're like, we don't really know what this is, but we know we love it. So it got to hit on so many different radio formats. It's great.
Yeah, that's very insightful. I agree with you.
It's great.
And this was the song that I would call and ask the radio station for every
Friday.
Oh,
absolutely. I kind of want to call them now.
And I'm still not over it. I mean, I still listen to this song regularly, and I love it every time. I will never skip this song.
It's my karaoke pick every time I go.
It is absolutely in my 10 favorite songs of all time, and it's very hard to talk about a song like this to me, because what do you say about it other than it's perfect, and that's that. So March of 1983, Laura releases her second album and calls it Brannigan 2, which I think is the most hilarious name.
Electric
because
Boogaloo.
At this point, like, it sounds like cop movies.
Brannigan. Come see Jean-Claude Van Damme in Brannigan 2.
Whew, I would.
Or like, no, actually.
I would change the channel on that.
It would definitely be like an early 80s cop movie. It would be like Sidney Poitier in Brannigan 2.
Oh, God.
So Brannigan 2 ends up being a number 29 album in the U.S., and does not chart as well as her first album did in Australia and Canada. Actually, that's a lie. It did it better in Australia, and it did not as good in Canada. But it was led off by a very powerful lead single that was also another very important pop diva's debut. That being
about this one.
Miss Diane Warren, because she wrote English lyrics to a French song called Solitaire, and Laura Branigan sang it, mm-hmm. and it was a number 7 hit in the U.S.
I have no idea how it was number 7. I don't love this song that much.
Really?
Like, it's fine, but it's, I don't know, it doesn't do anything for me. It's one of those, if it's on, I'm listening to it, but I'm just like, meh. And it's really surprising to me, because I never knew it was number 7. And I'm like, ooh, how?
Yeah, but and that's kind of what's surprising, as you'll see as we go on. She has a lot of songs that people know, and they just don't realize it.
Did not realize that on a lot of these. But number 7, huh.
Yep, number 7. Also a top 10 hit in Canada and Australia. Mm-hmm. And as we said, the debut of Diane Warren, who is still enjoying a very illustrious career. This was also Laura's first, like, real music video.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first two were just kind of performance videos, including Gloria, which is just, like, her dancing under a disco ball for, like, 4 minutes.
Thing. What I love about Laura Branigan is she kind of touches on these, like, Italo-disco things, and she's got a lot of dance stuff. But if you notice in her videos, she's very stiff, not a great dancer, which is my favorite thing about Italo-disco, because if you ever watch Italo-disco songs, no one in Italy can dance.
Right.
So it's, like, all these great music videos, and you look at it, and it's just, like, stiff. All those nights I sat alone.
And finally, I did not know.
I didn't know any of this.
Either. I didn't know she did this song first.
I know. And I also didn't know that Michael Bolton actually wrote it.
Yeah, I didn't either. This is the song, How Am I Supposed to Live Without You? Just a lot of surprise after surprise here. She recorded it first, mm-hmm. Like 5 years before he did. She also had a number 12 hit with it.
Did not know that either. And also didn't know that it was written so early. Like, it was written like 80, no. 81.
And, well, Michael Bolton was still doing, like, heavy metal music by mm-hmm. the late 70s and early 80s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then he turns around and writes this, and then Laura Branigan sings it.
That was originally supposed to be for Air Supply. And when you listen to it, you're like, shit, that is an Air Supply song.
Didn't they record a version of it as well?
I think they may have later, but originally it was supposed to be Air Supply. They were working with Clive Davis, and eventually things kind of, like, got weird, and they ended up releasing the song back, and that's when Laura Branigan took it.
Gotcha.
Yes, but when you hear it, I'm like, man, Air Supply.
And Michael Bolton, of course, did go on to have a number one hit with this in 1988, which is just so strange. I mean, it's a torch song. It makes sense because Laura Branigan and Michael Bolton are the same kind of singer, I think.
Absolutely.
So it makes sense that both of them would record this. But mm-hmm. it's weird that it was such a big hit for both of them only 5 years apart.
I did not know that.
I guess that was just the thing that happened in the 80s.
It kind of was.
I can't imagine that now. I cannot imagine someone releasing now a cover of a song from 2014 and having another top 10 hit with it. That's just weird.
It is. Then tell me one thing more before I go. Tell me, how am I supposed to live without you? Now that I've been loving you so long, how am I supposed to live without you? And how am I supposed to carry on?
Oh, yes, I said and finally, but there's one more we have to talk about from Branigan, too. And Danielle's got a big grin on her face.
Oh, wow. I wonder who we're going to talk about now. Who's Falco?
Right. So we need to talk about Danielle's favorite dude, Falco, because Laura Branigan did, in fact, sort of cover Der Kommissar.
Yeah.
Except she called it Deep in the Dark.
And it's not nearly as good.
No.
But it's, I mean, it's fine. It's.
And the English lyrics are by some dude named Bill Bowersock, and I just really wanted to say that name, because that's an awesome name.
It does sound like Carry English. On. Yeah, it has nothing to do with the original lyrics.
No, not at all.
Not at all, but, you know, it's It's fine, but I think it's more true to the Falco version than the After the Fire version. Totally. Which I love. I love that about it. Yes. I think you can't really do the After the Fire version.
I completely agree. This definitely,
you can get away with doing the Falco version, though, because not too many people like in America knew that.
Right. I think it would have been very weird for her to essentially record the same song that After the Fire had just released.
Exactly.
Yeah, that would have been super weird. But this was not a single. I want to point this out. This was just on the album.
It's just very, I remember like a few years ago when we discovered this. I can't remember. We were like, what?
Deep in the dark. It's just funny. Every time I think about it, it's funny.
Yeah, it's very.
Laura's next album came out on the 1st of April the following year, 1984, and it was called Self Control. And spoiler alert, that is the name of the first single. And oh my goodness, God, this song.
What is this song? Is just perfect. Love this song.
And I think
modern day, this is my favorite of all of these.
And a lot of people say that. If you ask like people who hardcore love 80s music, they will tell you their favorite Laura Branigan song is Self Control.
It is.
And I respect that. I do.
It's a great synth pop song. I actually like the original, which is an Italo disco song.
But see,
better.
I was going to say, to me, this is still an Italo disco song.
It absolutely is. It's not that different.
It's not synth pop. This is Laura Branigan doing a straight up Italo disco song and having a top 40 hit with it in the United States.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the difference between, it's pretty true to the original. The original has a really great little rap section.
Yeah.
And I think the production is a lot more synth pop than what Laura Branigan does here. I think they kind of mute the production a little bit to make it more poppy, more American friendly.
See, that's interesting because I think that the production is ramped up and I think that it's more, I think that if you go listen to Raff, the original is by a guy named Raff.
He's
which
Italian.
I think was Raphael something.
Yeah.
But it was co-written by Juan Carlo Bigazzi, by the way, who also co-wrote Gloria with Umberto Tozzi. That version, actually, you know what? I didn't write down my note for this. I don't know if it was that version or this version. I'm going to guess it was Laura's version that was the top-selling single of 1984 in Switzerland.
Yeah, I can't remember. But they were the funny thing about this, though, I read, is they were both out in the same time, like in the summer of 84 or something.
Right.
They were both out at the same time and both, like, hugely charting, like, all over Europe at the same time. So it was like the song of the summer, but like they were both on the charts at the same time, which to me is crazy.
Her version is better than his, in my opinion. She sings it a lot better, and the production, I just think, is a little slicker. His is more of a muted Italian Italo disco song.
Right. You see, I like the Italo disco part.
But hers is a straight up Italo disco song also. They made the toms a little louder. You'll see. It's just wonderful. And there is a reason that this song definitely became one of her signatures and is still very beloved today.
It's fantastic. Also, in 2006, a little synth pop group back in that time, like Infernal, who I loved, the From Paris to Berlin.
Oh, From Paris to Berlin. Yeah, I remember them.
They released a version of this that is very for the Ibiza Ministry of Sound crowd at the time, which was me. still is, if you ask me. But it's actually really good, too. Like, it's just a modernish version. It's not bad.
In July of 1984, the next single off this album came out. It was called "The Lucky One." I don't know. Somehow this charted three places higher than "Self Control," which just really is like a dagger in my heart.
Maybe it's the completely original video that no one's ever done.
Oh, a poor girl working at a gas station who gets swept up by a rich dude.
And gets to learn how to walk with books on her head. Maybe it's that original thing that no one's ever done before.
Wow, yeah.
That's probably what it is.
I don't know. Yeah, this is one of her,
I don't get
you
it.
Know, this is one of her, like, Housewife Danielle Steele type singles / videos. And I didn't really get this one, whatever, but it somehow charted higher than Self Control, which, whatever.
Sure.
That is laughable in 2019 to me, but it should have been laughable in 84.
I mean, it's one of those fake things on the internet. I don't know.
She also covered another Umberto Tozzi song here called Ti Amo, which did actually sort of chart in the U.S. at number 55. But this was a big old hit in Australia and Canada. Top 10 both places. And again, English lyrics by Diane Warren, her good buddy Diane Warren, teamed up with her once again. This song's okay.
It's okay. It's really corny.
I really like the drum production on it. I had a note about that, that I thought the drum production on this was really tight. Other than that, it's another Laura Branigan Torch song.
Exactly.
And finally, we're going to close this album with Satisfaction, which was a club-only promo single that ended up charting number 24 on the dance charts. Also lyrics by Diane Warren.
Slaps.
It does slap. However, I think in 1984, it was going for a disco sound that was a little bit passé at this time.
I agree with you, but I like it.
I was listening to this and going, man, I wish that she was fully embracing the 1984 dance sound. And heard some high energy, and it would not be long before my wishes were granted. But absolutely, we'll get there in a moment. Yeah, Satisfaction really is this song from this her dance single from this album, and it's okay. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I like it.
So July of 1985, we get Laura's next album, Hold Me, which charts very, very well in Sweden and Norway and not really anywhere else.
I bet it did.
And yes, there, you'll see why when you hear these clips. Spanish Eddie is the first single. And finally, we're hearing Laura do this kind of like 80s dance pop that I wanted from her from the previous two albums that we only got on Self Control.
she had been working with like a German producer for a really long time, Jack White.
Mm-hmm.
And she brings in for this song also Harold Faltermeyer.
Yes.
Bless him.
Yes, yes, yes.
Praise him. And it sounds like it. It's really, really good. It's so good. It's a great little synth pop song. It's really good.
Also of note that there was, I don't know if it was this exact song, but because of the appearance in this music video of a Chrysler Laser, which is just like the most 80s car.
I don't believe that that's a real car.
It is a real car. One of the songs from this album, it may have been this one, got used in Chrysler Laser commercials. So that is like, remember our The Most 80s Things episode? Like Laura Branigan doing dance pop in a Chrysler Laser commercial. It does not get much more 80s than that.
Absolutely.
So this one, again, this was a cover I did not know existed of Laura doing Alphaville's Forever Young. Which again was had just come out the previous year.
Yeah, I had to look up to see which one was first because I was like, I don't know which one these was first.
And I guess this apparently became another kind of signature for her in that she would close her concerts with it. It was not a single, but she would sing this as the encore at her concerts.
It's very strange. I don't really like this song in general.
Really?
Like the Alphaville version, it's fine, but I never need to hear it again.
I gotcha.
It's one of the, like, I'm just like, okay, cool. Like, I assume people, like, lost their virginities at prom to this, right? Like, a long time ago, but that was not my experience, so I have no emotional ties to this song. I feel like it only survives because of those memories.
Because of the prom versions.
And movies, and I just, ugh. It's fine. I'm happy you have those memories. That's it.
I mean, I think her version's nice. I think it's not. Fine. It's just a better sung version of the original one. Mm-hmm. The production is almost exactly the same, but you get the bonus of Lara's very nice voice.
Absolutely. Can you imagine when this race is won? As we turn our faces into the sun, praising our leaders, we're getting into the music's played by the madman. Be forever young. Do you really want to live forever? Forever and ever.
I just wanted to talk about this song because it happens to be my favorite on this album and is one of my favorite Laura Branigan songs, maybe tonight. I don't know. This song just slaps. I like to turn this one on when I'm getting ready to go out.
I'm going to tell you what. I have no idea how this wasn't a giant hit.
Right?
Not even on the dance charts. Did they just, like, not release it? Did they not send it to the right people?
It got released, but it didn't chart anywhere.
Like, of all of her songs to not be a dance hit, other than Gloria, maybe.
I agree.
This, to me, was, like, begging for it.
Because you had Spanish Eddie, which was technically a top 40 hit. It peaked at number 40. And then you got this, which I think is a better song than Spanish Eddie. And
I think so, too.
Nothing. Just total flop. It doesn't even hit in Europe. Very strange.
It's very weird to me.
Because yeah, this is a great song. I'm glad you were into it as well.
Love it.
And finally, a song that would become a bigger hit a couple years later for someone else, that being Cher, I Found Someone, which peaked at good old number 90, way down, which again is so weird because then Cher...
I didn't know that she did it first.
Cher puts out a version the next year with slightly better production and then has a number 10 hit with it.
Yeah.
The 80s were weird, man.
I think Cher's... I like Cher's version better. I don't know. It's hard to beat Cher. Cher just does stuff.
That's true.
And you don't know why it's good, but you're like,
it is weird to hear anyone else singing I Found Someone other than Cher. Even someone as great as Laura Branigan. It's like, that's Cher's song.
Exactly.
Did you also happen to catch who wrote this?
I felt like I looked.
It was Michael Bolton again.
Michael Bolton wrote this?
Yeah, I didn't know that either. Isn't that crazy?
I'll tell you what. If anybody sings like the female Michael Bolton, it's Cher.
I never thought
about that.
Interesting.
That might be what it is. She needs
maybe.
To do a Michael Bolton covers album instead of ABBA, instead of butchering ABBA. Sorry, gays. I don't like it.
Yeah. She still needs to make up for her that damn Walking in Memphis cover. I'll never forgive her for
God,
that.
Oh, God, I hate that song.
Oh, anyway, it's the worst.
We're not, episode canceled. No more Walking in Memphis.
That's right. Laura released the first single off of her next album in June of 1987. It was called Shattered Glass.
That's dangerous.
It is a Stock Aitken Waterman song, and there is really not much more to say about it, in my opinion, other than if you ever wanted to hear Laura Branigan singing a Stock Aitken Waterman song, this is it.
It's inoffensive, but it just... We'll put it this way. I put it on, and I immediately did other stuff and forgot I was listening to it.
The most surprising thing about this to me is that, like, Britain could not get enough of this kind of stuff at the time, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you had Kylie Minogue, Rick Astley, all these Stock Aitken Waterman, Bananarama, who were just these massive acts doing songs that sounded just like this. So this should have been total no-brainer gold in the UK. And no, it charted at 78. What more do you want from Laura Branigan, England? What is wrong with you?
Yeah.
You guys couldn't get enough of this crap. So Laura's next album, Touch, does come out in July of 1987, just a month later. Peaks at number 87, still not doing great. The next song, though, would be a hit for her. This is like one of the all-time iconic pop songs.
Uh-huh.
It's The Power of Love, which we've talked about with Jennifer Rush. And again, this is one of those songs to me, it's like, how do you talk about a song like this that is just...
You can't.
It exists up in the ether of pop music.
And it's, you know, like
everybody
the,
knows this
the
song.
The three main versions of this are all sung beautifully in
right.
their own right and are always, you know, everybody nails it and it's just a great song. And
right. The versions of that being, of course, the original by Jennifer Rush, which was 1985, I believe, 84, 85.
Yeah.
Then you have Laura Branigan's version from 1987, here in 1987, which did end up being a number 26 hit
which
in the US.
Which is also something I did not realize. Of all
yep.
things.
And then, of course, Celine Dion would do her iconic version in 93 and have number one with it, finally.
The bomb.
It's so strange that it took three times for this.
Exactly.
This one should have been a no-brainer. Like, what the Stock Aitken Waterman thing was to the UK, this kind of music, again, in America, like, songs like this always do well in American charts. And here we are.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I really like her version of it.
Yeah,
I think she
nails
sings,
it.
She sings it just fine.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about this duet she did with Cerrone because he's like this very weird producer dude. Yeah, I figured you would be into talking about him. He's just a weirdo producer guy.
He's a weirdo disco guy.
Yep.
And it's a weirdo little song.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
It's called Heart of Me. It was only released in France,
fun.
But I couldn't pass the opportunity to talk about Laura Branigan working with Cerrone.
It's a very weird little... mix of people, and I'm glad it happened. It's fun, as it should be.
Yes.
And that's all I can really say about it.
In March of 1990, Laura's next album, which was called Laura Branigan, came out, peaking at number 133 in the U.S., and this would be the last time she would chart an album in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
The lead single, Moonlight on Water, was a number 59 hit for her. It was written by Steve Kipner, who wrote the song Physical, the Olivia Newton-John song Physical.
Oh, yeah.
And it was originally recorded the previous year by some dude named Kevin Raleigh. Who was, I guess, in the Michael Stanley band and then broke off to do his own thing. His version is whatever. He had a number 60 hit with him, so that's funny that the next year Laura Branigan bested him by one spot. I don't know. As far as the song itself, it's like kind of weird to hear Laura Branigan singing about sexy stuff.
Yeah. What I kind I like about this, and I respect her very much, she switches very well into like the 1990s dance pop sound.
Yes.
And what I think is very cool is like in 1990, totally agree. You have kind of a Laura Branigan thing going where you've got like the torch song, big singers, you've got Whitney and Mariah.
Right.
All of these people doing that exact thing that Laura Branigan does so well. And then she goes the other direction, which I find funny, and just does like dance pop. I'm like, that's so weird to me that so much about 1990 was what she was doing that didn't quite hit all the way or hit decently well.
Right.
And it was there, but she goes the dance pop route. And it really is just like perfect 1990 dance pop. It sounds right. She transitioned well, but it's not the expected transition you think it would be. It's very weird.
That is a very astute observation. Yes, I agree.
It is. I mean, I like it. It's just very 1990. It sounds so 1990. And I need to feel adrenaline rush. Is it better than moonlight on water? Is it better than six on the beach? Think about
Well, we have to talk about Laura's wonderful version of Turn the Beat Around. I'm super into her version of this.
Look, like, it's fine. I'm not offended by it. But I just think that Gloria Estefan is the only person who can cover this ever. And people
really?
Try all the time. I just think she shuts it down. Like, oh, you just yeah, need don't to get me forget wrong. All other versions. Maybe almost forget Vicky Sue Robinson's. Gloria Estefan. This is hers now. This is hers.
Yeah.
It's hers. And so, like, anytime but, I hear okay. any other version, I'm like...
Okay, but rewind to 1990 when Gloria Estefan hadn't done hers yet.
I know, but it's... I can't hear it now. It's not bad.
I think that this the sound of this was actually a couple years before its time.
I think so, too.
Played me this and asked me what year it came out, I would have said about 1994 or 95. Mm-hmm. I would not have said 1990.
Yeah, I think a lot of that, too, is because she's working with a lot of, like, European producers who are making that sound that hasn't quite hit in America and hasn't... Like,
yeah, that's
there's
true.
A lot... You hear that, like, Euro pop kind of thing going behind it, and I think that's why it always kind of has that tinge.
But yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I don't hate this version. I just can't unhear Gloria, and it's hard for me. It's difficult. It's a handicap.
Estefan, not the song.
Oh yeah, so many Glorias. To be the rhythm, no doubt about it. Whoa, whoa. And when the guitar player starts playing that syncopated rhythm with the strike. Makes you want to move your body. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Laura's final proper studio album came out in August of 1993. It was called Over My Heart. And we're going to talk about one song from it, which is called Love Your Girl. And it was written by?
Oh, I don't know.
Gloria Estefan.
Oh,
so here we are.
Okay, that makes sense. Now that I'm listening to this, this makes sense. It's a pleasant little pop song.
Yep. It's pretty much the only song on the album worth talking about. The album was clearly like a very personal thing for her. Mm-hmm. Did not do very well, and that's not surprising. But I thought this song was kind of cute and was
it is cute.
Was worth at least a little minor hit.
It's
but
pleasant
it did not.
Early 90s dance pop. I have no complaints. It's not the biggest hit potential, but it's pleasant. I enjoyed it on.
Yeah, and the
I
fact that Laura Branigan and Gloria Estefan worked together once is pretty
it's
cool.
It's true, yeah.
In 1995, there was a show on television called Baywatch.
Kids. Iconic.
Iconic, yes, sure.
I actually really like Baywatch.
And Laura Branigan hopped on the soundtrack to Baywatch to sing the ending theme from season 5, a duet with David Hasselhoff called I Believe.
I'm just going to warn you, I have opinions.
Oh, please.
Now, I think one of the most underrated things about the 90s is music on TV.
Oh, yeah.
Music
okay.
on TV shows is fantastic. I think probably Beverly Hills 90210 is the
yes.
icon of that. Except, but I'm going to tell you the underrated one who had the best music and no one ever just appreciates it. Y'all just make fun of it. Baywatch. Baywatch had fantastic music. Great theme song. So then you get this soundtrack, and I'm telling you what, this song is exactly why I love Baywatch, and it's so iconic to me, and I love it. Even with the Hoff, what's wrong with the Hoff? Stop making fun of him. His music was actually good.
Stop hassling the Hoff.
He's actually really awesome. But yeah, I love it. I just love this sound. I love this
sound.
Yeah,
I mean, oddly enough, them working together makes sense. In some weird, twisted universe.
Here's the thing. I think it's because she'd worked with Jack White for so long, and he had also worked with David Hasselhoff. I assume that's how this came together. Mm-hmm. And probably they were working on this soundtrack. David Hasselhoff was like, you have to put me on it because he needs that kind of validation. And then he gets Jack White, and Jack White's like, bring Laura into it. I assume that's how that happened. But I love it.
Yes, I would say you're correct.
It's so Baywatch, and I love, love, love this sound. And I wish more people appreciated it. I wish. I believe there is a moment.
And finally, one final single to talk about, Dim All the Lights, which was a cover of Donna Summer's song, mm-hmm. and truly, in my opinion, cements Laura's undeniable status as a queer icon, because she made this really great video for it with some very famous drag queens and club kids, including Miss Understood was in it, Hedda Lettuce, and Vivacious, who is still very well known today. She competed on RuPaul's Drag Race a few years ago. But they were all in the video with Laura. And
we started with Drag Race.
And here we are.
And coming in. Wow.
Yeah, and I think it's a great cover and just a really nice note to end her career.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very protective.
Her recorded music career, anyway.
I'm very protective of Donna Summer covers because I love Donna Summer songs, and I feel like it's very hard to do it better. And I don't know if she does it better, but she does this very well. I really like it. And I think it's because I didn't realize Laura Branigan's voice is very Donna Summer. Like, it's just, it's very similar in a way that this, I'm not mad at it when I listen to it. I really like it. It's very pleasant. Good little cover. When you find the perfect love, let it fill you up. Dim all the lights, sweet honey, 'cause tonight it's you and me.
So Laura would leave the music industry the following year, 1996, to care for her sick husband, who did end up passing away shortly thereafter. She did briefly return to acting in 2002, playing Janis Joplin in Love, Janis.
Which I did not know.
Yeah, I didn't either. But she dropped out. It was some dispute she had with the way the production was being carried on, but she dropped out after a couple of performances. Mm-hmm. And she did, unfortunately, end up passing away in her sleep in 2004. Had a headache and didn't go see the doctor, and then passed away a couple of weeks later.
Biggest nightmare right there.
Yeah, and I remember because I mean 2004, I was well past the childhood years of loving mm-hmm. her, and I remember being so bummed out when she died. I mean it was horrible. I was really sad because I had loved her and that one song that I would call the radio station for
absolutely.
So much. So Laura has had this bizarre resurgence in popularity in the last few weeks because of the NHL finals. This all started because I guess some St. Louis Blues players were hanging out in a bar and the DJ kept playing Gloria. And then this somehow spread and became a meme like among the team and then spread to the fans. So the whole shtick was when they win or like when they hit a goal, they yell play Gloria and then they play this song and all mm-hmm. the fans go crazy. And if you look on YouTube, Twitter, wherever, you can find videos of like these hockey bros all shouting all the words to Gloria. It's really wonderful to see.
I really
honestly.
Do love hockey. Hot dudes with ginger beards Singing Gloria. Like,
there you go.
Is this the porn I wrote? Is this what, did this come from my brain?
the one kind of like, oh, about this was that I guess after this became a thing, like, there were all these people, like, tweeting the account of her estate and, like, saying, hey, will she come perform at the finals?
Oh, yeah, I read about this.
And they actually had to, like, issue a statement like, aww, well, that's very nice, but she died 15 years ago. And, yeah. So, but on a lighter note, there is video that has resurfaced of Laura Branigan singing the national anthem at a St. Louis Blues game in 1982.
Oh, so that's awesome.
That's like the full circle moment. She did actually go to a Blues game in 1982 when she was like first peaking.
That's really cool.
At the height of her fame with Gloria. So it's like, it's perfectly fitting.
That is really cool. Yeah, I think it's funny. I've been meaning to check because like this went into like after the Stanley Cup. It like charted on the iTunes charts. It was like number 3 in the download. So I've been trying to pay attention to see if like it ends up like charting again, and I don't think it has.
It was kind of funny. Like, wait, the couple of like my other queer friends are just like, "What is this? Why?" Like, I saw screen caps on Twitter. Like, why? What is happening? Why is Laura Branigan charting? I was like, "Well, actually, we're gonna have to blame the Straits for this one. Believe it or not."
You mean thank the Straits?
That's right.
The one time.
That's right. The one time.
The hockey Straits from St. Louis. What? None of this
That's
is
right.
Right.
And here we are. 2019 is truly a strange time to be alive.
The year of our Lord.
But we are appreciating Laura Branigan in it, so it's not all bad.
We are.
Thank you very much for listening to this tribute to a totally underrated pop icon who deserves all-time great pop icon status, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Laura, you were awesome. Thank you for the song she gave us.
Sorry you can't go perform in St. Louis.
Yes, but in spirit, you are there. Mm-hmm. We're going to collect all these video clips we've talked about, and including, if I can dig up that live performance of her singing the anthem again, I'll throw that in there. And that'll all be for you to see on our website, which is offbeattrackscast.com.
And if you want to tweet at us about hockey, we definitely know about it.
Nope. About try anything. Again. About pop
about
music.
About anything.
Yes,
pop
please.
Music. We are at Twitter at Offbeat Tracks.
Yes. And we'll see you back in a couple of weeks. We're going to talk about some crazy Germans next time.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so until
my wheelhouse.
Until then, I'm Max.
I'm Danielle.
See ya.